Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In the lane, Portis. And are they going to count the hoop, Bill?
Yep.
Counted the foul, yep. Bobby Portis. And Portis comes back to Chicago and registers a double-double of 11 points, 12 rebounds.
I don't have any regrets, man. I feel like I'm playing some good basketball right now. My confidence is back, picking my spots to score the basketball at. And it's fun to play this game. Going out there, competing every night, knowing that we have a goal and we have a goal in making the playoffs right now, and you know that's our main focus.
Welcome back on into 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. My name is Kevin Zipak, here with you until 9 o'clock this morning, taking you up to Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron. They'll be in at 9. On the way in there, you heard the voices of Chuck Swirsky and Bill Wennington. They were on the call last night here. You heard the Bulls lose to the Wizards on the score, 134-125. You also heard the voice of Bobby Portis, former Chicago Bull, current Washington Wizard. And right now, let's go out to the hotline where we find Casey Johnson. Of course, you know him as the longtime beat writer for the Bulls. You can follow him on Twitter at KCJHoop. Casey, good morning, man. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much for coming on the program. I liked your lead and your story you wrote about last night's game. It's not often a February game between two sub-500 teams carries so much emotion, but I guess yesterday was kind of an exception to that rule, was it not?
Yeah, both Bobby and Jabari, not only with their play on the court, but with their words off of it, showed how much that game meant to them. Bobby was clearly emotional as the Bulls aired a video tribute to him during a timeout in the first quarter. Jabari talked pregame about, you know, he's said it before, but a little bit more eloquent and a little bit more forceful about his well-chronicled usage here, or I should say lack thereof in terms of his usage here.
Yeah.
And then Bobby talked to us afterward, and just, you know, it was obvious during Bobby's time here how much he loved being a part of the Bulls and part of the city. And, you know, the trade really, really shook him when he left Wednesday night. He was pretty emotional as he was leaving the United Center. So pretty powerful night all the way around, and a resounding Wizards victory.
Yeah, resounding is definitely the right word, I think, to use there. You mentioned that Bobby Portis is an emotional guy, and I think that his reputation is a little unfair amongst some people. You know, I mentioned earlier in the show that a lot of people, when they hear the name Bobby Portis, they just hark back to that incident with Nico Mirotic, and that's kind of just the lone thought that people have of him. But, you know, you covered Portis since he was drafted a few years ago, and you know him a little bit. How is he actually, like, as a guy? You know, I know his reputation can't possibly be, you know, just as the guy that hit Nico Mirotic in practice. I mean, what kind of a guy is Bobby Portis?
You know what's weird, Kevin, is so you bring that up, and, like, when I think of Bobby Portis, that might be the last thing I think
right,
of,
yeah.
which that's actually probably a little bit of a fault of mine. I mean, I got to look at that a little bit more objectively. But, you know, it was pretty well chronicled when that incident happened that not only with what the Bulls said publicly, but obviously a lot of reporting from myself, from Joe Colley, people like that, that not only was that viewed upon as an incident where Nikola Mirotic kind of crossed the line and was an aggressor, but that, you know, players were kind of on Bobby's side of the whole kind of, not only just that scuffle, but just that competition, that power forward practice competition. More teammates gravitated towards Bobby than towards Nico. Now, look, I need to make sure and emphasize that nobody deserves to have their face broken. I mean, you know, that was clearly where Bobby crossed the line.
Just as a disclaimer, and you're throwing it out there.
Just as a qualifier.
Okay,
I need to throw that out there. But, you know, Bobby clearly crossed the line with the punch and you know, paid a penalty for it. He was suspended for 8 games. But, you know, getting off the micro and into the macro, I mean, Bobby was as well-liked of a teammate because of his enthusiasm, his passion, his energy, his, you know, he talked about having Bulls DNA. I mean, he would come in for the off-season workouts and lead them, did some community service work. He was a really well-liked and well-valued member of the locker room.
Talking to Casey Johnson, he covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at KCJHoop. Just a couple more things about Bobby Portis here before we move on. A lot to go over here. He did turn down a contract extension from the Bulls, I believe, before this season. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And so what was the financial ballpark there, and what is he, I guess, expecting to get in the offseason there? I mean, he is his contract's coming up. This is what players wait for, the opportunity to kind of sell themselves and get that big payday. Is he expecting, you know, a bigger deal than what the Bulls were offering? I mean, clearly he does. Does he want more years? What was kind of the thought process behind that?
Yeah, it was. I mean, there were several proposals exchanged. I don't know what where they were at in terms of the final counter proposal, but the Bulls offered at one point a 4-year deal. Bobby was on, you know, pretty public last night post game talking about how some of the reported figures, including my own, did not factor in that there were some harder reach incentives in that deal. So the deal probably was painted more lucratively from one side than the other. But I've reported that it was like a 4-year deal in the $45 to $50 million range. I'm guessing if you take those incentives out, it'd probably be a 4-year deal in the $40 million range. That's mm-hmm. a guess. It's not reported. So Bobby, I'll tell you this, word around the league is that Bobby's looking for like $14, $15, $16 million annually. And look, you'd like to think the general managers are going to learn from the summer of 2016, but there's a lot of money out there this summer. And all it takes is one team. He is an incredibly valuable player. You know, even though he didn't shoot the ball well last night, he showed that last night. I think he's going to get more than what the Bulls offered him. I'm not sure he's going to get what he wants, but, you know, we'll see. It just takes one team.
Regarding Jabari Parker, the whole situation with him coming to the Bulls seemed like it was doomed from the get-go, even with his kind of some of the curious comments he made regarding his defense and perhaps his defensive effort. Can you pinpoint one particular moment where it went sour with Jabari Parker here with the Bulls?
I think you just nailed it. I mean, that first day was
rotten from the jump, huh?
It was quite a whirlwind. I mean, you know, he's trotted out as a celebratory homecoming piece, and some viewed his personality as a little defensive, pun not intended, at that first press conference. I personally got to know Jabari pretty well while he was here, and I found that his the perception of him doesn't really square with the reality of him. He's actually just kind of a different guy,
yeah.
a soft-spoken guy. He's obviously well-immersed in community service here, always has been, even when he was with the Bucks. Getting back to that initial day, though, obviously he continued the nuttiness with you know, the appearance on your guys' station and some very curious defensive comments. But look, you know, I always maintain you knew who he was when you signed him. He said this publicly. You know, I held up my end of the bargain. You knew who he was when you signed him. You're not going to be winning a lot of games this year. Shouldn't your five best players be on the court? I think if you watched last night's game, you'd see that he was one of the five best players on either team on the court. I mean, he's got talent. He's the number two overall pick. So I thought it was a weird relationship from both sides right from the start. And look, Jabari has acknowledged and should acknowledge that, you know, he did have some responsibility in the failed equation. I mean, he didn't show up to camp in the best of shape. His transition defense at the start of the season, although I didn't think it proved, was laughable at times. So it was just a mess. But no one can deny, if you watch just one game, no one can deny the guy's got talent. He was unbelievable last night.
Kevin Zipek here on 670 The Score, talking now to Bulls beatman Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune. What was the relationship like between Jabari Parker and Jim Boylan, both before Boylan was the head coach, and how did that relationship change after he was given the job?
Yeah, that's where I thought Jabari was the most eloquent he's been on that subject, because all of us who've been around the team, you know, have known that and not alluded to it. But Jim was kind of the Jabari whisperer when Fred was the coach. He was like the guy, I got you. You know, I'm working behind the scenes for you. He's trying to prop him up. Jim is a, you know, for all the attention that Jim's, you know, heavy-handed and tough comment and grit and bulls across your chest and all that stuff gets, he actually cares a lot for his players, and he spends a lot of time with them. And obviously, when you're in an assistant role, albeit one with the title of associate head coach, you can kind of be a little bit, not buddy-buddy, but you can put your arm around guys a little bit more. When you're the head coach, that kind of goes away. So it did go away, and it went away in a dramatic way by Jim deciding to remove Jabari from the rotation altogether. And I thought that's definitely the first time that Jabari has publicly given voice to the 180. He called it a 180 in that relationship, and how much it stung him and how much it surprised him. And, you know, there's no secrets here. I mean, Jim went on record with the reasons for doing it. He said, you know, need better practice habits and better effort on defense. So, you know, that is his stance. I think for a team that's having trouble to guard with pretty much anybody, and again, some of your offensive struggles, I didn't always agree with the move, but I'm not the head coach of the Bulls. I'm just a beat writer.
What do you make of Otto Porter Jr. coming over? You know, he's a pretty good player, I think, objectively. That's pretty clear. He can do a lot of different things, and he can do some things that the Bulls didn't really have before he came over here. Does he make them better, and does that affect perhaps what they're trying to do here, you know, in getting a high draft pick? What was the logic of bringing him in?
Well, the logic was it solved a position of need in terms of a starter. I mean, Bobby is a great, as I mentioned before, a great piece, but I don't even want to call him a luxury because you need, you know, at least a 3-big-man rotation. But right. he was going to be a reserve. It's as simple as that. Carter and Markkanen are the future, and so Bobby, however you pencil him in, he's going to be a reserve. So they viewed it as an opportunity to get a starter at a position of need. So now they feel like they're set at 4 positions with Chris Dunn being the one still evaluated. Will he help them win more games or short term? I mean, their view is that if you look at the standings, they're pretty clear of Atlanta. I mean, they're not going to win more than Atlanta. I don't think so. Right now they're pretty much guaranteed of that 4th worst record. Obviously you want to get into the top 3 worst records. But they also are cognizant of what the bad losing can do to poison kind of some of the core players.
And yeah.
John Paxson is on record before the season and before all the craziness and the injuries and the coaching change of saying, we're not going to do what we did last year. So, you know, that wasn't the tank or the draft line position or whatever you want to call it was not really in their minds when they made the deal. They made the deal because they saw an opportunity to get a starting small forward. Now they've made the deal. Will Otto Porter make them better? Yes. Will he make them better to the point where they catch the Hawks? I don't see it. So, I mean, just look at last night. They couldn't guard anybody.
The defensive effort last night, I don't even know if it's effort or just complete negligence, but I mean that second quarter there where Washington put up 42, you know, wasn't Jim Boylan supposed to improve the defense and put an emphasis on heart and grit and effort? Where has that been defensively for this team?
No, that's a great question because, you know, when he first took over, it was well documented how much he slowed the pace down and road dog mentality was phrases he was using.
Road dog, yeah, of course.
Yeah, sure. And they, They did improve defensively considerably when he first took over, and now, you know, the offense is at least more modern and click into the, you know, they've scored 100 or more points in 18 straight games. It's the ties to the 9th longest streak in franchise history. I mean, it's not helping them win games because now the defense is off the cliff. So obviously, what you want to get to is the point. And he talked about this post game last night: his consistency at both ends. It's hard to do with a young team. But it is a little troubling that, you know, while the offense is revving up, the defense has gotten so poor.
A couple more minutes here with Casey Johnson. He covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune. I don't know if you got a chance to hear any of Pax on the station Thursday. Did you catch any of that?
I heard it, yep.
Okay. What was, you know, obviously all the reporters, you know, they mingle a little bit. They talk. What was the vibe, I guess, after that interview, and what do you make of John Paxson, kind of, you know, the perception of him? Because it feels like he took umbrage with the poor perception that the franchise has.
I didn't discuss the interview with anybody else within me. I personally am not a big fan of media, talking media. Everyone's got a different job to do. Everyone's got a different role to play. So I don't get into critiquing other media. I just do my job. But, you know, I've known John as long as anybody, but probably Sam Smith from a media perspective in the city. I've known John in different roles. You know, when I was first on the beat, he was the radio analyst alongside Neil Funk. I was around when he was an assistant coach. So, I've known John a long time. You know, my perception of him is that he is someone that cares deeply about the Bulls franchise, cares deeply about winning, is an incredibly competitive person, and doesn't always enjoy being challenged when those tenets or those cornerstones of his personality are challenged. And, you know, look, he was a very competitive player, forceful player, drew a lot of technical fouls, kind of an annoying player. He can be that combative at times as an executive because of what drives him as a person and as a competitor. So it didn't surprise me that interview happened. I mean, I think anybody would say there's probably some moments he might want to have back. But he also, I'll say this about John too. He takes great, I don't know if pride is the right word, but he takes seriously the responsibility of trying to be honest, accessible, and transparent mm-hmm. about himself and about what the Bulls are trying to do. And if he feels that's being taken advantage of, and I'm not saying it was, I'm just saying if he feels that's being taken advantage of, that's what you're going to get. So that's how I would address that. But look, as I said before, I'm not critiquing anything because everybody's got a different job to do.
Yeah.
Everybody can interview however they want to interview. I got my relationship with John. I do my job my way. And, you know, it was certainly a good radio for you guys. I'll say that.
Yeah, we've definitely milked it as much as possible. we'll let you go here just very quickly on the way out. You mentioned, you know, the losing culture and that kind of permeating in. It's hard in the NBA when – you know, it's tank, 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 and you hit the floor. It's hard to build back up. You look at, you know, other franchises that have done that have been down, you know, for seemingly ever. Like, you know, Orlando, for instance, it seems like they've been kind of in this NBA hell subsection even where they can't, you know, quite build themselves back up. If the Bulls don't get one of these top three picks in the upcoming draft, where does that leave them as an organization?
You know, and by the way, the Kings were in there until they started getting better and clowning the Bulls. But,
by the Kings. That's where the Bulls rate right now.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, they're going to get you're right. They could still fall from the lottery. I mean, I would just say you got to wait and see what the draft pick is. But their belief is if you look at the last two drafts, they're probably lower than they wanted to be. Well, they didn't know they were going to be in the seventh pick with the Butler deal. So, but they've nailed two straight seventh picks in Markkanen and Carter, or it looks like they have. I shouldn't just anoint them. But their big belief is that they're not as bad as they are this season, that injuries and the coaching change have disrupted them. And I do think this season has been enlightening for them in the sense that they said it was all about trying to figure out who fits long-term in the core. I think it's pretty clear they're going to want to upgrade the point guard position. So that's going to be something they're going to be addressing. So you now have, as I mentioned, four starters in Carter, Markkanen, Levine, and Porter that they believe in. They're going to get a high draft pick. They're going to have about $20 million in free agency to work the margins and add another veteran or two who could help next season. And their belief is that if they stay healthy, that – you know, they're not as bad as they are this year. There's going to be internal improvement. They're going to add a couple veterans in free agency beyond the Porter trade they've already acquired, and they're going to add a high draft pick to it. So they feel they'll be able to take a jump just internally from that. I mean, are they going to be a championship team next year? Absolutely not. But they feel, as they keep saying, that, you know, they're being patient in the rebuild. They feel they're going to be making some positive strides next season.
Casey, thanks very much, man, for getting up this morning, hopping on the program. Really appreciate it. Also, Dennis Gambino wanted me to tell you hello.
Okay, I appreciate that. And thanks for having me on. I enjoyed the chat.
All right, thanks, Casey. Appreciate
it. Thanks. See you guys.
That is Casey Johnson, longtime Bulls beat man from the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter at KCJ Hoop. My name's Kevin Zipak. I'm here until 9 o'clock this morning. leading you up to Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron. This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS-4-KIDS. Phone number here is 312-644-6767. If you want to react to anything that Casey Johnson said there, we've got some texts and tweets streaming in now. In regards to the interview and the Bulls in general, I know in the first hour of the show, we had a lot of angry callers venting about the Bulls, and that's good. It's good to let out your steam every now and then. So if you want to do that, you can hit us up here at 312-644-6767. You can also send us a text message, 67011. Later in the program, I do want to get into these baseball prospectus Pecota rankings. Also, if you watched any of the football last night, let me know about it. I had no idea there was football on, but apparently here we are. We've got another football league, the Alliance of American Football. My name's Kevin Zipak. Again, I am here until 9 o'clock. Give me a call, 312-644-6767 here on 670 The Score.
Oh, I don't even know if he caught it. The ball is between his legs.
There you see our replay official here, Jimmy Oldham. He will have final say in terms of what the calls are made on the field as we listen in.
Jeff, are you there? Jeff, are you... So what's the ruling on the field? It was a catch, correct? Okay. So, well, here's what I've got. I've got only 1 foot in plus loss of control. So we are going to go incomplete pass on this play. So we're going to go back to the line of, to the previous spot.
Welcome back. It's 670 The Score, 670thescore.com. My name is Kevin Zipak. I'm here until 9 o'clock. So we got another 33 minutes or so of molten hot content. On the way in there, you heard the American, or hold on, what is this? The Alliance of American Football. There was football on last night, Shep. Shep's already here.
Jeff, are you there? Jeff, are you?
That highlight courtesy of CBS. I had no idea that there was football. I had heard of this league before. I've heard that this was in the works, but I didn't know that yesterday was the launch date, if you will, the debut of the Alliance of American Football. I don't know that there's a need for another professional football league, and actually this is only going to be the second professional football league. The XFL is going to be back next year as well, but I'm not sure how much of an appetite there is for essentially minor league football 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. If anybody caught any of this last night, let me know how that went for you. 312-644-6767 is the phone number if you watched any of the Alliance of American Football last night. Apparently, Kevin did. He's in Aurora. Good morning, Kevin. What's going on?
Hey, good morning. Man, I've got a lot to say about this. I really enjoyed it, but I think perspective is really important. I'll use this metaphor. If you've ever met someone who says, man, I really don't like cats because they're not like dogs,
right?
It's really a foolish statement because, you know, God made a cat to be a cat, not a dog, right?
Sure,
so
sure.
You have to approach this for what it is. And they,
is it a cat or a dog?
Job. It is what it is.
Okay.
I mean, it is a developmental league for the NFL, was the way that they were explaining it in the pregame show, which I thought was really cool. I've been researching this for maybe a month leading up to it when I found out about this league. I'm like, this is kind of cool because I have an appetite for football, you know, between the Super Bowl and the start of baseball season.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an appetite for football, right? I'm not an NBA guy. I'm not much of a hockey guy. And so I tuned in last night. I actually recorded it because I was at a high school function, and then I came home and I was excited. I watched the pregame show, which was excellent. Kurt Warner was kind of the face of the pregame show. What I like about the league, a lot of things. There are some really fantastic coaches that are big-name coaches. Mike Singletary is the coach of the Memphis Express. Steve Spurrier is the coach of the Orlando Apollos, who played last night. They won 40-6, I think. Mike Martz was coaching last night. He lost. He was coaching the San Diego Fleet. And then Dennis Erickson, he's coaching the Salt Lake Express. They played this afternoon at 3 o'clock. I'm excited to watch that team because Joel Buono from NIU and from Aurora Christian, he's a running back, and he's on that squad. So, you know, this is a guy who you know, Boigno, for example, he made the Bears practice squad and got cut. He made the Packers practice squad and got cut. This is an opportunity for a guy like that to play football instead of just going to a house of speed and repping. He can actually, you know, play 10 games with other aspiring NFL players. And the game speed last night was good. I mean, it wasn't NFL game speed, but it was close. The crowd was good. There was probably 25,000 people in the stands at the Alamo Dome. That was good. Some of the hits were awesome. This kid that was playing quarterback for the San Diego Fleet got absolutely blasted on a quarterback sack, hopped right back up and started slinging the ball on the next play. He did not have a good night. He was a really good quarterback with Arizona State a couple years back. Made it to the NFL, but got cut. And then the quarterback for the San Antonio team, who hosted the game last, Toledo.
Oh, I thought we lost
and
you.
He was fantastic.
Thank you for the call, Kevin, from Aurora. Now, that's a lot of enthusiasm for the Alliance of American Football. He went on for 3 minutes there.
It sounded like it was a Bears postgame show.
Well, you know, I asked if there was an appetite for professional football after the Super Bowl, and I think Kevin from Aurora there put it into words perfectly. I mean, he's got scouting reports on these guys. He knows who the coaches are. You know, Mike Martz was a part of this thing. A texter from the 815 points out that it was way better than watching the Bulls, which I think was probably one of the prevailing opinions last night. And, you know, despite the fact that we had the Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis return game last night at the United Center. A lot of people are so down on the Bulls right now, and I think a lot of people saw that football game on last night as an alternative. You know, you want to watch some sort of sporting event on a Saturday, but you don't want to stomach what the Bulls are right now, and I think maybe a lot of people went over and checked it out. Obviously, Kevin and Aurora did some extensive research. 312-644-6767. John out in Rolling Meadows has thoughts on the Bulls. Morning, John. What's up?
Hey, what's up, Kevin? Yeah, what about them Blackhawks, huh? Six in a row? I mean, they actually have a power play. I can't remember the last time the Blackhawks had even a decent power play. So this is good. This is good. You know what? If Paxton has any kind of kahunas, he's got to step down. That's the only way that Gar's going to get fired, is if a new president comes in and he's told by the owner that if you're going to be the president, it's up to you to clean house and get people out of there you don't want there. It's up to you. Because you know what, Paxton, he's way out of his league. He's talking gibberish. He's saying things that Bulls fans have heard for years and no longer believe. Last night, the only reason I watched it was because I wanted to see how Portis was going to play against the Bulls, and when he did come off the bench, he looked pretty good last night.
Yeah,
he looked like he wanted his new club to beat the Bulls last night, and they did. They looked good. The Bulls are a mess, and then they go out and pick up a guy that can actually play small forward for them, and that's just a bad move for a team that should be out for one of the top three picks. And it doesn't look like they're going to get any of the top three the way that, you know, if they brought this guy in. They're not going to try to tank, and they should. They should. They need to get. But, you know, Kevin, the thing that bothers me about them getting a top three pick, how are they going to nurture him? How are they going to bring him along? He's probably going to play for the Bulls until his rookie contract is up, and he'll leave too.
Appreciate the call. Thank you for checking in, John, in Rolling Meadows. Well, the idea is that if you get one of these big three players in this upcoming draft, whether it be Zion Williamson or R.J. Barrett or Ja Morant, you know, the idea is that you put him alongside the foundation that they have here with Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter, Zach LaVine, maybe Chris Dunn. I've soured on Chris Dunn a little bit. I think the jury certainly still out for him. But the idea is that you get one of these top three picks and you add them to what they already have, and then you build up a contender from the ground floor. You know,
that's just a fact.
That's just a fact, Pax. That's what you're trying to do here. And apparently he thinks this is only his second rebuild. I think he should probably go back and check some of the past seasons, but the idea being here that all of this tanking is to acquire all of this young talent and have them grow and nurture together to build up a contender from the ground floor. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully, yeah, I disagree with you there that, you know, you're going to bring in a guy for his rookie deal and then he's out the door the first chance he gets. That's obviously always a possibility, but, you know, the idea is that you want to create a good environment here and create a winner and guys that get along and play along together and they can get you back into, you know, respectability, because the Bulls are just so far from respectability at this point. You know, that should be the next step, is quit being a laughingstock. That's what you should achieve before you even think about the playoffs or a championship contender. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Looking to take family or friends out to a game? Try a Chicago Wolves fan four-pack. Four tickets, four Vienna beef hot dogs, four drinks, popcorn at one low price, and enjoy free parking this season courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for ticket information. 312-644-6767 is the phone number here. I talked a little bit earlier about these Pacoda projections for the upcoming season for from Baseball Prospectus, both a little bit sour on both the White Sox and the Cubs. Not so surprised to see them down on the White Sox. You know, they have added, of course, Yonder Alonso, John Jay, Ivan Nova, replacement-level players, essentially. You wouldn't expect the arrow to move too much there, but I was surprised at how down they were on the Cubs. So I want to talk a little bit about these Pacoda projections after a quick timeout here. Before we go, though, let's get out to Keith. We got time to take Keith, right? Thank you, Elijah. Keith is in Rockford. Good morning, Keith. What's going on?
Yeah, Cade. KZ, I was going to ask about, what do you think the percentage chance of Harper signing with the Cubs is and Machado signing with the White Sox? And would you categorize what's going on with the big money free agents as lowballing, collusion, or what would you call what's going on right now?
I think lowballing is a good way to put it, and appreciate the call. Thank you very much for checking in, Keith from Rockford. I think that every single one of these owners of a Major League Baseball team can not only afford to sign Manny Machado or Bryce Harper, every single one of the owners of these teams, whether you are Pittsburgh, Tampa, the Yankees, the Red Sox, it doesn't matter, the White Sox or the Cubs for that matter, every single one of these teams can afford to sign anybody they want. These owners are all billionaires. They're all making more money than they ever have before due to TV rights and revenue sharing and everything else that goes into being a billionaire and all of these extra little incentives you get for being a billionaire, because hell, who needs help more than billionaires? But every single one of these teams can afford to sign anybody they want. They all have the financial capability to do so. They're not doing it for whatever reason. I don't know if it's as simply, you know, like you said, lowballing or collusion. I think I would fail to go that far and call it colluding. I don't think all the managers got together and say, hey, let's, you know, give these guys really crappy offers. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, guys or teams, I should say, and the owners and the decision makers don't want to tie themselves down into these long-term deals that are paying guys $30 million a year, even though they can afford it. They just don't want to hop into an investment so frivolously. And I think that I'm a little shocked, personally, that Machado hasn't signed anywhere yet. I think he'll end up with the Yankees. I've said that from the jump. I'm shocked that Bryce Harper hasn't signed anywhere. I thought that he would sign with Los Angeles, the Dodgers. Right now, though, it's looking like maybe the Phillies continue to be the favorite there. They just went out and made a big trade for JT Realmuto yesterday, so they're going all in, apparently, for the next season. I don't know, though, where these guys are going to end up. To answer your question, though, no, I don't think anybody's coming to the Cubs. I think what they've done this offseason in terms of penny-pinching is disgraceful, and I think if you're a Cubs fan, you should be embarrassed for a lot of different reasons for the Cubs organization this past week. What's up, Joe Ricketts? Good morning. But I think that the way that they've gone about this offseason financially, you know, going about it like a small market team, I think is embarrassing. And I think that the amount of money that the Cubs bring in and the amount of money that they have available, the fact that they haven't really spent much of it this offseason, I think should be embarrassing for that organization. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. After a timeout here, going to get into some of these Baseball Prospectus Pacoda rankings. I mentioned they are very down on the Cubs. I'll explain perhaps why after a timeout here. My name is Kevin Zipak.
here till 9 on 670 The Score. Welcome back on into 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. My name is Kevin Zipak, here for another 15 minutes or so. Might stick around a little bit after the hour and transition over to the next program with Nick Shepkowski and Big Ant Heron. They will be here from, what, 9 to noon today? Thank you very much, Elias. This segment brought to you by the National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd to the 24th. The nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo focuses on bird dogs, wild game, cooking, and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org. On the previous side of the show, before we took a time out there, I alluded to these baseball prospectus PECOTA projections for the upcoming season. And I'll start with the White Sox here because it's a little bit less surprising, I think, than what they think is going to happen with the Cubs. As of right now, and of course these are subject to change with other player acquisitions or trades or any kind of transaction that may happen before the start of baseball season, but right now PECOTA thinks the White Sox are going to be a 90-loss team once again. 71 and 91 is where the White Sox are on the PECOTA scale right now. They are not too high on the White Sox starting rotation. Of course, Carlos Rodon, the ace of the staff, only projected to be a 1.2 wins over replacement with a 4.42 ERA. And I think if it ends up like that for Carlos Rodon, you would definitely call that a massive disappointment given where he was a few years ago when it looked like he could become, you know, a top of the rotation guy and he ran into those shoulder problems. You know, it's hard to come back from a shoulder if you are a pitcher. You know, guys can come back from elbow injuries and you can kind of work yourself back up there. But a shoulder, I think, is a little bit more concerning, which is, I think, one of the reasons why this is a really big season upcoming for Carlos Rodon. And honestly, if he's a 1.2 win player with a 4.5 ERA, that's going to be really bad news for the White Sox. After that, they're not too hot on anybody else in the rotation. They don't have any of them at even one win. They've got Giolito here at 0.3 wins. Ronaldo Lopez, 0.1 wins above replacement, the projection for him. That would be a massive disappointment as well. After that, you've got Ivan Nova at 0.8 wins. And Manny Banuelos, a name you may not be familiar with, but apparently he's being projected to be the White Sox number five starter at 0.8 wins as well. So, you know, you add Manny Machado to this team, which I don't think is going to happen. I think he's going to end up with the Yankees. I've said that all along. But, of course, until he officially signs anywhere, you still can hold on to that hope a little bit. If you add Manny Machado to this team, I think best-case scenario, it puts him up to, what, from 71 wins to maybe 76, 77. There's a lot of work to do here with the White Sox, and they're still not quite in that win mode quite yet. They do have some work to do. Now, a guy like Machado would certainly push you in the right direction, but as I said, we're going to have to wait to see where he ends up. As far as the Cubs go with their projections for the upcoming season, we talked about this a little bit on the Mullion Haw show when these were released on Thursday. Of course, the man that sits next to me during the program, Dustin Rhodes, was just aghast at some of these projections. He was just taken aback. One, because he's one of these people that hates computers and metrics and math and logic, you know, all of those things. And he just couldn't wrap his head around the Cubs being as bad as PECOTA thinks. PECOTA has the Cubs in 2019 as an 81-win team. 500. 81 wins, 81 losses. Now listen, I'm not a Cubs fan. Thank God. I say that a lot. Thank God I'm not a Cubs fan. And especially after this offseason that they've had, I think that is reinforced even further. But even somebody like me and all of my eternal pettiness and want for the Cubs to be putrid, just so I can kind of revel in it a little bit, I cannot bring myself to think that the Cubs are going to be a 500 team in the year 2019. I think it's absolutely nuts. And I know these PECOTA ratings are usually a little bit more negative than some of the other projections
that are out there. I mean, last year, the Cubs, I think Pecota had them as an 88-win team, and, you know, they won 95, obviously. They outshot their projections considerably. Now, let's say the Cubs outshoot their projections again this year by 6 or 7 games. That's still not even a 90-win team. That's going to be really tough in National League Central Division that has gotten so much better over the past couple years, and in this offseason in particular. You know, you've got Milwaukee reloading, the defending division champion Milwaukee Brewers, might I add. They've reloaded. They're coming back. They've got the league MVP. St. Louis goes out in the offseason. They get Paul Goldschmidt, one of the premier right-handed hitters in all of baseball. He's going to be a huge boost to that lineup. Cincinnati, now, I think a lot of people have differing opinions on what the Reds are going to do this upcoming season. I've talked to some people who think the Reds are going to stink again and be the bottom feeder of the division like they've been for so many years. And I've talked to other people that are a little bit higher on the Reds that think that maybe they could be, you know, 500 or a few games over and kind of be in that mix. Regardless of how you feel about Cincinnati, it's hard to deny that they have gotten better. I don't know how much better, but they're better than they have been. The Cubs aren't going to be able to beat up on Cincinnati like they have, you know, for the past several years where they've been kind of accumulating a lot of that padding that they've had. But, you know, I talked about how Pecota was down on the White Sox rotation. They're down on this Cubs rotation as well. Not to the same extent, of course. I mean, on paper, and I'm being objective here, I think you could definitely say that the Cubs on paper do look like they have one of the strongest pitching rotations in the National League. Maybe Pecota doesn't quite feel that way. They think John Lester is going to take a fall off a cliff this season. They have him at a 4.42 ERA projection with just one win over replacement for his value. Obviously, John Lester is a veteran. He's been around a long time. You knew when the Cubs signed him to that deal all those years back that maybe the back end of that deal wouldn't look so good. And apparently, Pecota thinks that that's going to begin this year. They've got Jose Quintana at 1.7 wins above replacement for his projection, 1.6 for Cole Hamels, which for the amount of money that he's going to be making, you would expect better. But he's another guy similar to Lester, a veteran with a lot of miles on that arm. You don't know how he's going to react in his next full season, despite the fact that he was admittedly great. I was wrong on that one. After he came over from Texas last season, Cole Hamels performed great. Apparently, Pecota doesn't believe that that's going to happen again. Kyle Hendricks, 1.8 projection. I think that's a little harsh. And then Yu Darvish, the much maligned Yu Darvish, might I add. They've got him at 142 innings pitched, which I think is very interesting. And they've got him at a 3.8 ERA, 1.8 wins above replacement. I think actually in regards to Darvish, given what you got from him last season, which was very little, you know, Yu Darvish made several more headlines last season for, you know, his injuries and his mental fragility and, you know, misinterpretations and all of the other drama that surrounded him last season. You got pretty much 99% of that, and you got like 1% of the conversation being on Yu Darvish, the player. And for all of the money that you invested in Yu Darvish and hell, the money you invested in Tyler Chatwood as well, along with Jason Hayward's big contract, that's kind of been one of the, I guess you could say, rationalizations that Cubs fans have had to look in the face, that they've spent all this money on underperforming players that has taken them out of the running for guys like Manny Machado, for Bryce Harper, for Craig Kimbrell, who I think would, you know, be a huge boost to this Cubs bullpen, which is a question mark. Every bullpen's a question mark every year. From year to year, it's hard to evaluate.
But it's
what
it's,
a bullpen's going to be. Yes, what's
it's
up?
It's fair for the Cubs because you don't know who your closer is going to be. If maybe Morrow doesn't come back till July. I know they're saying, what, end of April? But you never know, especially with him being so injury prone.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm with you there. Yeah, and like I was saying, you know, all bullpens are a little bit of a wild card from year to year. But I think in particular, this Cubs bullpen does, you know, feature more question marks than a couple of other ones. That's a good point on Brandon Morrow that you make there, Eli. You know, even last season when he was brought in, everybody knew about Brandon Morrow and his injury history and how good he can be when he's healthy. But the caveat there is massive because he's been so hurt all throughout his career, whether it was in Seattle or Toronto or even in L.A. when he kind of rejuvenated his career as an elite late inning reliever, setting up Kenley Jansen. You know, there were always those question marks, and you had to ask yourself that if you're Theo Epstein, Jed Hoyer, before last season, do we invest 2 years and this money into this guy who frankly, and maybe harshly, is unreliable. You don't know what you're going to get from Brandon Morrow, and especially, you know, given the fact, like you just said, Eli, he's not going to be ready for opening day. He might not even be back by the All-Star break. When he's in there, he's great, but you don't know when you're going to get him in there. Pedro Strop is fairly reliable. I mean, he's another guy, though, that's kind of getting up there in years. Carl Edwards Jr. kind of went off the deep end last season. I mean, he's kind of a weird guy anyway, and you kind of you don't know what you're going to get from so many of these players. So I
you want Brandon Kinstler closing games?
No. Well, for me, I'd like to see the Cubs have to resort to that because I like when the Cubs lose. But I don't think if you're a Cub fan, I don't think you want Brandon Kinstler closing games. And I wish Justin Wilson was still here too while we're at it because Cub fans were much in favor of Justin Wilson being sent out on a boat away from Wrigley Field as far away as possible. 312-644-6767 is the phone number here. Like I said, I'm going to hang around a little bit past the top of the hour here, bring in Nick Shepkowski and Anthony Herron for a little bit of transition because that's a fun thing to do on a Sunday morning. My name is Kevin Zepak. Going to stick around for one more segment, bring in Shep, bring in Anthony Herron shortly here on 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.